This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Motorator DeAndrea, here with Bill Goldberg. How are you doing?
Well, there's a giraffe.
You got the...
So, not much sleep. My wife has less sleep, and I'm kicked down at the bottom of the list. So that's where I am. I failed to tell you that prior.
There was a deer in your garage a minute ago, just wandering around.
He wasn't in the garage. He was in the perimeter, you know, because the fence, the electric fence isn't on because I'm in here and I usually don't. It's all good. Part of it.
Let's do a quick shout out for the Goldberg's Garage YouTube channel. I would say on behalf of both of us, thanks for tuning in on that. The garage video, which I know you've been waiting 4 years to post the walk around, and it was just a casual, informal, like, let's test video. Let's just do a quick show the garage and what's in there. Is a million views so far, and there's cool stuff in the garage. But you know, if I would make a suggestion, I wouldn't mind seeing a short video of you just doing a quick walk around of the garage itself. Just look at the outside. What does it look like now? There are 16 garage doors and a wash bay. And I know your guys can cut in some of the drone footage that you did. But yeah, mostly you walked around, the cars. You didn't do the bikes yet. And if you looked at the comments, there's questions about the bikes, which you'll get to. But I am kind of curious to see the lay of the land. Like, how did the staircase come out, and your office and your podcast studio, and the lifts kind of laid out, and it seems like, yeah, you could just walk around. It's going to take 3 minutes, but it's not, it's going to be more than that. Like, cause there is something pretty amazing with the garage, and there's stories. We've had 4 years of stories of the garage. So you're going to get into all the individual cars and stuff, plenty of time for that. And the walk around was good. But I'd like to see, and I still haven't been out there yet. So I've seen what everybody else have seen, you know, other than a few photos, texting back and forth. And
I've got some unbelievable build footage over the past 3 years that I'm going to compile. And thank you so much. You should be my new creator, editor, whatever. Writer. You should be my new writer. But yeah, man, in thinking about that, I believe that's the next step.
I mean, there's drone footage, there's the time-lapse footage, and then there's sort of the final product that you can walk around and describe to us. You can narrate to us like what it is. Anyway, because I want to see it. I mean, first of all, it turned out amazing, but also... from scratch. So it was just like, you know, we've been hearing the stories of like what's working, what's not working, and the debacle with garage doors and lighting and this and that, and you know, the HVAC unit that's the size of a Dodge Ram, and it just like, it's like there's a lot going on there. So it'd be cool to kind of see, now that you've got a breath going, and you know, take a breath and see the garage and putting stuff in there, and shit's going to get moved around from time to time. You're going to be like, you know what? We set up a station here. We decided to move it someplace else, or it's just a little more accessible. And I mean, even just little stuff like in my garage, I've moved the toolbox around a few times because I'm realizing
hanging my first neon. I still haven't done that shit. And that's terrifying. Completely. You saw how long it took me to do my office, right? You know,
yeah. Yeah.
just those little tiny things are huge tasks. So I think they're entertaining to have the audience sit along and watch, man. And I'm very appreciative. You mentioned it, a million views on that one video and a lot of followers. And, you know, thanks for sticking with me for the period of time that you did. I think the interest shows at how many people I pissed off over the last 3 years explaining it. But now hopefully you guys will be entertained, because it's all I can say is buckle your seatbelt, because you're in for a wild ride. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. So it's on YouTube, as we said. Just subscribe to Goldberg's Garage if you wouldn't mind. And that way you'll get the alerts. Because right now here's the truth. There's no real rhythm on videos being created and being posted. So we can't say yet, hey, every Tuesday you're going to get something new. At some point, something will get figured out, but there's still this big learning curve and kind of figuring out how it's going to happen. So if you subscribe, then you'll get the notifications of when shit will get posted. But in the meantime, just be patient.
And let's just say that was the biggest understatement you've ever because yes, it's an arduous task. I mean, getting all these people together and trying to come up with something that you think everybody will be entertained with, and then make sure it's edited properly and you have your ass covered and you're not saying F-bombs every 5 minutes. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to really edit. So
I watched the demon video, and right when you said the horsepower, I was going to call you out on it. And then it popped up in the text. I was like, oh, somebody caught the horsepower edit. But that was funny though. I saw it, I laughed, and it got caught. But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of,
I'm trying to cover my ass and
of doing this.
Here's the point too. A lot of these guys like keeping information that's incorrect in there to create a stir and to create a conversation and to have people, but I can't do that. I don't like doing that. First of all, it drives me flipping nuts. Second of all, I know it's not true. And when I go back and look at it, I feel like the biggest imbecile in the world. But then again, when I ask them, I'm like, you know, here's the way I feel about it. I see them sit there and smile, and I go, oh, I'm asking the wrong guy, right? Because that's a new generation that look at things completely differently than we do, right? I want to be factually correct at everything I say. But if I fuck up and it's funny, then they want to keep it in there, right? So a 440, 426, whatever the fuck. People think that I don't know my Dodge product. They're crazy, man.
So, well, listen,
at the end of the day, it's laughable. It's funny, but, you know, you just got to cover your...
All right. So for today's show, we're just going to get into a few things, and then we're going to throw to the Gordon Murray interview that I got to do with Adam Carolla from Monterey Car Week. We mentioned it before. We were a little concerned about the audio. It's there. It's fine. At some point, halfway or so through the conversation, you hear a Gordon Murray Automotive T50 fire up and idle in the background. And I thought it was going to be too loud because it seemed loud from where we were, but it's fine. Like it's a recording at a racetrack. There's going to be noise, but
the T50 started up. What do you apologize about?
You know, I've said this before, Gordon Murray's a fascinating man. I enjoy talking with him. So we have that interview that'll be coming up in a few minutes. Last week on our way out of the show, and honestly, I don't even remember if we did it on the air or off the air, but we were talking about the end of the Ram TRX, which we knew we were coming, but we didn't quite have the information yet.
Before we get into this, how come time we talk about Ford, it's a positive story. And now today we're going to talk a little bit. I saw the info, you know, pre-podcast. We're going to talk about the TRX not having the horsepower bump that I proclaimed that it was going to have. And then the Charger is the most stolen vehicle.
There's a few things.
Oh, come on, man.
there's a few things happening. Well, if it makes you feel any better, the Tesla Model 3 has been refreshed. And it's got a nice little facelift to it. It's going to have a little bit more range and some new features and a little bit revised interior. And this is a big moneymaker for them. It's hot selling vehicles. So if you like the Tesla, You might want to wait for this refresh version. Chances are they also dropped the price quite significantly recently. So there's a lot of ups and downs there. But there you go. There's some Tesla news for you. All right. TRX. TRX is going out with a final edition, a supercharged final. I don't know why they call it supercharged. It already was supercharged, but the TRX final edition. There's no change in the horsepower. There's a couple of new colors available and a nice little, not a horsepower bump, but a price bump. So
nice little price bump. Yeah.
Nice little price bump.
It's an understatement. And I mean, I'm pissed. I'm pissed. I heard from the horse's mouth it was going to have a horsepower bump. And to see again that they're kind of failing in delivering that and they're boosting the price, quite obviously, because it's the final edition.
And they're equipping it with that, with the level two equipment group. So it's going to come basically standard with that, which was an $11,000 package. So it's $116,535. I think, let me get that right. So 116,000 was the TRX with the level two group. This, after the destination charge, you're at $119,620. So you're basically at $120,000. Now the Ford Raptor R, I think, is $110,000. So there's about a $10,000 difference here. But again, I don't know if it's apples to apples as far as how it's equipped. But this final edition, Ram is only making 4,000 of them worldwide. Ordering books will open in October, and then production ends in December. So they'll all be built by the end of December. You still get the 702 horsepower, 650 pound-feet of torque. There are a couple of new choices: Delmonico Red, Harvest Sunrise, and Night Edge Blue. No idea what those look like, but sound interesting. Hydro Blue is dropped from the color chart because they've got Night Edge Blue. And I don't know exactly how different they're going to be. There are the beadlock capable wheels in the satin titanium. They got different decals for the hood and the bed if you want those. Anyway, it looks cool. It's kind of what you'd expect. Final edition, 4,000 being made. If you want one, you can go in pretty soon and get your order in, or maybe just start calling the dealers now and get on the list. You've got enough TRXs. Don't get another one.
I was going to trade my last one in and get this new one if there was a horsepower.
Right. So you have a first edition and a last edition. That was the plan? That was
the plan. But then the plan wouldn't be very feasible because then I'd feel like shit driving either one of them. So I have to buy another one. So it doesn't make any sense. I'm not.
Right. So the collectability, you're saying get the first edition, get the last edition, but there's a collectability. But the first edition you drove for a little bit and then you were like, I'm going to keep this one more collectible. And then you got the next one so you can play around with it, modify it, do some stuff to it. So it seems like that's going to be the most fun, but there's going to be other stuff you're going to set your sights on. So let's just give it a beat. That's just my thought. Give it a beat. In other news. yes. As you mentioned, the Highway Loss Data Institute.
There's ways you can look at this, right? Hey, it's very popular.
It is very popular. Also, it's the number one car in a movie franchise where there's a lot of, like, I don't know, car thefts and ridiculous things, shooting cars into space. Like, what we're talking about is the Dodge Charger was ranked number one car stolen, and not just the Charger itself, the Hellcat. They're going big. Thieves are like, if I'm going big. And it's by such a wildly large margin, which is insane. So the top three most stolen vehicles right now, is Dodge Charger SRT Hellcat, Dodge Charger Hemi, and for some reason, Infiniti Q50. And even the statistics on it, like, we don't know why the Infiniti Q50. I mean, cool car, I get it, but those are the top three. And then number four, by the way, is Dodge Challenger. But Dodge Challenger number four, 766 cars. Infiniti, 878 cars. Charger Hemi jumps to 2,197. And then Hellcat jumps to 6,128. The difference between an Infiniti Q50 being stolen and a Charger Hellcat, 878 to 6,128. People are stealing a lot of Hellcats. Also, where are these things being parked?
I think Dodge did it on purpose to double the driver experience of each vehicle. At least
I don't know what's going on here. Like, I'm not saying it's the most stealable. I think any competent thief that wants to take a car has figured out how to take a car, right?
Well, if you're others.
Yes. Now, so you could look at it this way. You could look at it, maybe it's how easy is it to steal? And then you could look at it as, what is the most wanted car?
Well, we need, right? we need a thief on car cap.
That's right. The least stolen cars are Tesla Model 3 all-wheel drive, Tesla Model Y all-wheel drive, and then Volvo XC90 all-wheel drive, and then GMC Arcadia all-wheel drive. And we're talking about three, numbers like 3, 6, and 7. Now,
we just don't know how to steal an electric car.
Maybe you don't know how to steal an electric car. Maybe. Now, I say Tesla Model 3 all-wheel drive because, like, whatever, 8 on the list, it's a Tesla Model 3 that's not all-wheel drive. But if I had to guess, I would say parting out the car is some value. I don't know if it's the only value or the real value here, but there is value. Parting out a Tesla Model 3 seems far more complicated, and there's probably not a lot of desire in the aftermarket. There's probably some few things you can strip from that car: wheels, front and rear bumper clips, glass, door handles, things that have gotten damaged, and body shops want to buy it cheap without buying it from Tesla. But a Charger, I mean, you've got the wheel and tire package that's desirable, the wings, the splitters, the seats, the engine, the supercharger, the big brakes. There's so many pieces that can be sellable.
Right.
You know, like you can go buy Big Bear brakes or Wilwood or, you know, Brembo brakes or something, or you could probably creep around on Craigslist and find Hellcat brake package. Right. And like, and whatever the story is, oh, it's a takeoff part. You know, I upgraded, or, you know,
we took it off the car. Well,
we know where you got it. You got it from the one of 6,128 or whatever vehicles that are being sold. I think that's a frequency number, not necessarily an average number, but anyway, just kind of interesting. So listen, if you're shopping around for takeoff parts from a Hellcat, chances are those parts are stolen. Okay. So I think what we're going to do is we're just going to go ahead and just jump over to the Gordon Murray interview. So why don't we throw to that, and then we'll wrap things up. So before any further ado, here we go. Let's listen to Gordon Murray. All right. We're here at Laguna Seca Raceway with Gordon Murray and Gordon Murray Automotive. You got all the cars out front, the T50, which we got a chance to sit down last year at the Quail and talk a little bit about the T50 and the T33, but now T33 Spider, and a track car, race car. Is it?
Yeah. The T50S is just a track only car. Yeah.
It's an impressive piece. I want to talk a little bit about the Maybe we get into the T33 Spider a little bit first on kind of, you know, sort of how that came to be when, and the changes maybe needed to be made to make it a Spider, or was it always a Spider?
Well, it's an interesting question, because when we launched the business, we promised people that we wouldn't do any more than 100 of any one model or variant, but we also promised people we wouldn't do the automotive trick of just regurgitating the same chassis with a different body on it. So 50 was our halo car, as promised, 100 cars only. And the next platform, we always said, would do 3 variants, but never more than 100 of any one of those variants. And the next platform was T33. So we knew it was always going to be a coupe and then a Spider. And the third variant, we think, is going to be more hardcore S, which we'll announce next year sometime. But I don't normally like Spiders because being a vehicle engineer and a vehicle designer, if you lose the torsional rigidity, you lose the base platform for transient handling. And I always like to protect that, of course, you know, to make sure the car handles properly. So what we did with 33 is we designed the Spider first, even though we announced the coupe. We actually designed the Spider. So we hit our minimum torsional target for vehicle dynamics with the Spider, and therefore whatever the coupe has on top of that is just a bonus. So I can put my hand in my heart and say we're going to protect the vehicle dynamics with the Spider.
Yeah, and to take on the Spider project, is it because you thought it would be a great customer car, or because you wanted the challenge of creating a Spider with the parameters that would be a Gordon Murray parameter?
It's actually a little bit of both, funny enough. From a pure business point of view, building a brand new platform for just 100 cars means that the unit price of each car is going to be pretty high, like T50, for example. And we wanted the car at a lower price point from T50. And the way to do that, of course, is to do a higher number off the same platform. So that was half of it, if you like, was a business decision. But the other half was, I've always thought of doing a Spider that actually handles and doesn't have scuttle shake and all those other nasty things you get when you lose torsional rigidity. So some of it was actually a challenge, yeah.
Let's talk philosophy, because I think it's just a really good era for people who want to create design and automobiles. And, you know, I graduated high school in 1982. There wasn't a car I wanted. In 1982, I couldn't afford anything, so it was academic. But, you know, the Corvette was a pile of junk. The 911 was sort of okay. Ferrari was not moving too well. It, you know, in the future looked bleak. Like, it looked like, well, more regulations, less fuel, yeah, slower cars, more safety, more plastic, more junk, you know. And it's sort of like, was like this move from 60s, you know, mid-60s, late-60s, with all these iconic automobiles, you know, American and abroad. You know, America had the muscle, and, you know, Europeans had all their great offerings as well. And then we just started this sort of downhill slide. And I look around now, and I see companies like your own, but I also see many other sort of companies, independent, you know, not big three, not big Japanese, not big anything. And there's so many offerings, and they're so good. And, you know, a Mini Cooper S could whoop up on a Ferrari 308 at a day out at Laguna. We're here at Laguna now. There's no doubt that Magnum PI's car could not hang with a $23,000 Mini Cooper S on this track. And I don't know how it went from the sort of dog days, you know, oh, my God, a future without cars to this, like a future of the most incredible automobiles. But you lived through all the sort of hills and valleys, right?
No, I absolutely agree. And I agree with the timing too. And really, that's how the F1 was born, because we were looking for something to kick off McLaren Automotive. I mean, I walked in 1990, I walked into an empty building with one other commercial director, literally an empty concrete building. And I was given a free hand to start the company, find a team, and decide what our first car would be. So I drove all the latest offerings. And at that time, if you remember, around 89, 90, we had the F40, which was actually, of the bunch, the most fun to drive.
Yeah.
And actually, the only turbo car I've ever driven where the turbo doesn't completely wreck the experience. We had the 959 Porsche, we had the Jaguar XJ 220, and we had the Bugatti EB 110. And those were the cars I drove. I also drove some of the older supercars, like I had a Countach for a week, although I only drove that one day because I couldn't see out of it. And at the end of it, I thought, you know what? None of these cars hit my engineering level, for example. None of them were a pure driving experience. They all had foibles that weren't just fun foibles. They were really bad things like offset pedals, you know, A-pillar obscuration, over-shoulder three-quarter view, something that would stop you driving the car quickly or having fun. So it was then I thought, right, let's start at the top. Why don't we just, rather than pick a price bracket, well, I went back to the other shareholder and said, right, the first car is going to be this. It's going to be the very best car I can design for the driver and the very best car I can design from an engineering and a materials point of view. And I wrote down, it wasn't a list of things I wanted. I wrote down from my driving experience. I drove them all on the track and on the road. I wrote down all the bad
things. Where were you? What track were you on?
I was on the track over towards Wales, Pembrey, I think it was. Pembrey, yeah. And then I drove them all on the road. And I wrote down all the bad stuff. Life's really funny, you know. You learn, not just in cars, but you learn much more from your mistakes and you do from, nobody ever says thank you
totally
when you do when you do something right, you know. Yeah. So I wrote down, you know, terrible pedal offsets. The EB 110 was just had the most ridiculous motor I've ever driven. You know, below 5.5, it felt like a 1.3 VW Golf. You know, it just had nothing.
Four turbos on that car,
nothing
right?
at all. Yeah. And you know, the quality of the engineering and the Jag 220, once again, too, was just the engine was such a letdown. And it was a monster car with no space, no luggage space. You couldn't see out of it. And I wrote down all the bad things. And then I thought, right, let's get rid of those. Design a car that doesn't have any of those bad things. And then enhance the good stuff. So the car that did have a good throttle response, let's make it better, you know. Let's bring the level of engineering up to a completely new level. And I literally had carte blanche. I had a very small budget for design, tooling, and development, but I had no budget on the cost of the car, and that was key. And out of that came the F1. And I like to think, but you guys probably are better judges than me, I like to think that was the beginning of the end for the downward slide.
Yeah.
So when the F1 came out, it really did set, sounds really big-headed when I said it did set new standards, you know. Because it got rid of all those foibles, I think people then stood up and went, whoa, okay. You know, Porsche did the Carrera GT. Ferrari's response to the F1, if you remember, was the F50.
Sure.
And those cars are quite engaging, you know, and on an upward, I would say, run, not a downward.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to box a lot, and I always think about the heavyweight division, and they had their salad days with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier and all these names. And then they had these down years in mm-hmm. the 80s where it's a bunch of guys you'd never heard of mm-hmm. that are not Muhammad Ali and yeah. Joe Frazier and George Foreman and all these things. So there's a kind of an ebb and a flow
yeah.
that's natural to everything. And it's heavyweight division, it's architecture, mm-hmm. it's automobile design. You yep. know, it's not just a hockey stick up to the moon. It's like some bad years, some lean years.
Yeah,
movies
yeah.
are that way, art is that way. But it does, sometimes it takes a fighter like Mike Tyson to rescue like something. Like the yep. F1, like Gordon with the F1.
30 years later, they're catching up with the F1. I feel like...
Yeah, but then it's actually started to... you had one of your... once again, you're absolutely spot on. We had one of the downturns again, because what happened is, of course, we had the highest specific output, we had the highest revs, the most power, the fastest car, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't meant to be fast, just happened to go quickly. Top speed. And then to chase that, apart from the Carrera GT, which had that lovely NA V10, to chase that, people started adding turbos because they couldn't make an NA engine that was more powerful. And in my opinion, we then had one of your downward spirals again, because then people started focusing on power and 0 to 60 and lap times, and they lost the purity again of the driving experience. And 30 years, fast forward 30 years, I'm 2017, I'm celebrating 50 years of car design. And we had a lovely exhibition. We had very nice people who lent me cars from all around the world. We had 42 of my cars in one building, and it was wonderful. But then my team said, you need to do a bit more than that for 50 years. You know, why don't you do another supercar? And I thought, you know, the F1's still regarded by most people as a pretty good motor car. And why should I?
If you look at the auction prices, you'll...
who would have thought?
Oh, my God. You should have stashed away a couple of those for yourself.
So I had one for 20-odd years. But and then I looked around and I thought, yeah, you know, the Carrera GT is a nice car, but it's got its issues, and there's no space for luggage. You know, the F50... solidly mounted engine, you know, all the fillings fall out your teeth, and nobody's really done another in 30 years. Nobody's really done another F1. So why do we do that? Because after 15 years, it would have been pointless, because there wasn't enough advancement in engines and materials and technologies to make a significantly better car than the F1 15 years after. But 30 years after, absolutely. You know, not just materials, but the technologies that are around now. So that was the decision point where we went, righto, well, nobody else has done it, so let's make another F1. And that's exactly what T50 is.
How much of it is engine management versus materials, computing power, pre-detonation
stuff?
No,
it's all
stuff.
Materials.
Oh, it's all materials.
It's all materials. The engine management is just how you make everything, all the pieces of the jigsaw work as a cohesive piece of driving. But it's not that. Cosworth.
Metallurgy? I mean,
absolutely.
Is there really materials?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yes.
Wow,
Cosworth are just. Well, you look at the next highest revving engine after we our hard stops 12,400.
Honda 2000.
So we've got. You know, the engine is the lightest, lowest center of gravity, fastest revving,
so it's
highest specific output. It just breaks every single record, but not by a little bit, by a mile.
So you're saying it's the connecting rods, it's the crank, it's the piston
valves,
materials, the valves,
the orientation,
the physical
of the
metal.
Absolutely.
Oh. Because I figured we went to space in the 60s and we had the Blackbird, SR-71, like we had titanium. And
But surely you have to ask yourself why everybody else stops at 9, 5, or 10.
Right. And so it's not about management. It's not about
not
computing
at
power.
Not at all.
Interesting.
Nothing at all. No, it's all about knowledge, background knowledge, and materials, and systems, actually, as well. The systems and the way people get around mechanical problems, and that's just knowledge, and Cosworth have that in bucket loads.
Are you running a belt or a chain on the cams?
Oh, no, a chain, you can't go more than 10,000.
Yeah, I was going to say.
On a big engine, there's no way, unless you've got a motorbike engine where the chain's tiny, there's no way you can go more than 10.
Are you running gears?
All gear-driven. There's not a belt or a chain
that can do
on the
over
motor
10.
Car. But on this car, what? Most people strip off the alternator, the starter motor and stuff to make the show engine look good. The engine you can see outside is everything.
So everything is gear?
Yeah. We designed our own integrated starter generator, 48 volt, and that does the work of three alternators, the starter motor, and it makes 48 volts to drive the air conditioning compressor as well. So we have no belts on the engine.
What kind of compression are you running?
The road car's 14 to 1. And the S is 15 to 1.
Holy shit, 15 to 1.
You start getting
might
the point
as well turbocharge
now.
It. Wow.
When you put together the plan for T50, and again, maybe T33 and T50 were all sort of part of the plan from the beginning, and do you approach someone like Cosworth and say, this is what I want to do, can you guys do it? Or did you sort of have more of an idea of what needed to be built and put it out to multiple engine manufacturers and said, who can do it?
Yeah, I mean, I started life as an engine designer. So I did engine design at college, and I've designed several engines and gearboxes. And so I knew exactly what I wanted. And I looked around, and we had three people to consider, but to be really honest, Cosworth already had the job, because they are just so far ahead of any other engine manufacturer in the world for technology and solving high revving engine problems.
Well, Adam is just drooling over that Cosworth Vega over there in the corner, kind of tucked behind Chip Connor's area.
Well, I don't know if you're like me, but I think you are. I think I would safely say, you know, all the horsepower and the Nürburgring lap time and torque and everything, I just say, you know, everyone knows, you know, race the Datsun 510 around this track. People always go, how fast are you going? I go, it's not really about how fast. You're flying on a Southwest flight, you're going 500 miles an hour. It's not that. It's the sort of the experience. And I was just thought the naturally aspirated engine and the challenge of the naturally aspirated engine versus just bolting a big supercharger and a belt on top was a much more nuanced sort of experience. And you could get the same horsepower from a small block with a supercharger on top and put some fuel added, you know, octane boost in it or something. But it was the finesse of like wringing that horsepower, you know, out of that engine that made it interesting
That's
to
it.
Me.
That's it in a nutshell. Yep.
Oh, good, I'm back.
There you go. Good. Nailed it. But now you've got to wrap that power plant in a car.
Sure.
And as you were saying, like the benchmark was set high with F1.
Yeah.
But for you to do a successor to F1, the benchmark needs to be more than everybody else's benchmark,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So sort of an unfair challenge.
Well, it is, yeah. Try and beat yourself. The F1 is pretty well known for its packaging, of course. You know, it's the footprint like this. It's the footprint of a Porsche Boxster, and you've got three grown-ups in it, and a V12 engine, 85 liters of fuel, and four suitcases. So that's a packaging challenge. So I had to be better with this car. And we have got, it's got a slightly bigger cockpit than the F1. It has a slightly bigger luggage compartment than the F1. And it's really no bigger, it's a few millimeters bigger on the outside, but that's about it. The other thing was the weight. You know, the F1 was 1140, I think, kilos. And I was desperate when I did the F1 to get under 1,000 kilos. I couldn't get carbon brakes to work in those days, it was too early. On the road, so we lost quite a few kilos there. We ended up at about 1140, something like that, I think it was. So this one, I was absolutely determined to be the first supercar under 1,000 kilos, and it is just under 1,000. And the S is actually 890.
You know, US, 1,000 kilos.
Yeah, it's 2.2 pounds.
What is, you know, we just walk the Quail. We walk everywhere we can, look at every car we can. We saw everything at the Quail, and at the very end, we saw a Lamborghini Miura SV. And I was like, that's still the best looking car. And we've seen every offering of every modern, every old, every vintage. The Bizzarini 5300, I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty nice. But that Lamborghini Miura SV, we all just walked around and went, that's the best looking car ever made. But for you, design wise, and I'll front load it by saying the Bizzarini 5300 is pretty beautiful, and the SV Miura. What is your kind of holy grail in the just aesthetics?
Well,
department?
Actually, all you've got to do is look at T33, because when you do the McLaren F1 or T50 with a central driving position, the pedal line is opposite the front axis on the wheel axis. So it's actually around 10 inches further forward than a conventional left or right-hand drive car, where you've got to miss the wheel on lock with your pedal box. And that means the proportions of a 50 or an F1 are more spacious than motor car. It's very forward cabin. Mm-hmm. And you cannot do a traditional... I grew up in the 60s. I'll come back to which cars influenced me in the 60s. Moore is one of them. You can't do that proportion with a central driving position. And I only just finished the F1, and I thought if ever I get a chance to do another two-seater, supercar, I will use all the my influences from the 60s. My car collection is nothing like a typical car collection. There's no big Aston Martins and Lamborghinis and stuff in there. It's all tiny little Italian cars, beautifully proportioned Abarths and a lot of Zagato in there, and SZs and things like that. So the influences for 33 were the Mura. There's a position you can stand and look over the front bonnet, and it is pretty much Mura. The 904 Porsche, if you look at the back. The Alfa Romeo 33 Stradale, which I think is the prettiest car ever made. And the second prettiest car, the 206 SP Dino. Not the road car, I don't like that, but the racing car. And those are all mixed in there. And I just got a chance to pour out all my classic car proportions, but not retro in any way, shape or form, in a modern shape, you know. And you can't stand there and go, oh, it looks like a 33 Stradale or whatever. It's a T33. But they're all in there, I promise you. And that all comes from those beautifully proportioned cars. We were determined not to follow the current supercar trend, where everybody's trying to make the next car more outrageous with more holes and ducts and fins. And
we just don't care.
You know, we don't care about 0 to 60. We don't care about lap times. We don't care about making horsepower claims or outrageous styling. Everything is about the ownership model and the driving experience, full stop. We don't even measure the 0 to 60. The only reason I calculated the top speeds is to work out six gear ratio.
Well, I mean, we're living in an era where an electric car for under 60 grand could beat most supercars historically 0 to 60. Yeah. So why are we even competing in that arena anymore? And nobody can drive these cars to their full capability anyway. So it's obviously ridiculous. One car that we forgot about is a car that Matt and I always talk about and I obsess about. I love that car. But we're going to put you to the test because it's a deep cut, this car. The T...
It's an ATS 2500 GT.
ATS 2500. I love that car.
Beautiful car. I nearly bought one of those.
Of course.
It was designed by a very dear friend of mine, Carlo Chiti. I worked with Carlo Chiti for 3.5 years at Alfa Romeo when we ran the flat 12 engine in Formula One.
Oh, wow.
And he's a real, well, he was a real character, you know, typical Italian character. Had to learn Italian in a month to go and work down there. And yeah, I love that car.
It's so beautiful, isn't it?
It's a very pretty car. There was one up.
There's one on the lawn last year.
About a year ago, or maybe a little more. And I just didn't quite have the cash at the time, but it went for more than I thought, you know. I love it, yeah. But that's typical of the sort of car I'm talking about. If I could walk around my car collection with you guys, it's all those sort of cars.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
All of them.
Yeah,
SZ, Alfa Romeo, Di Tommaso Vallelunga, Porsche 550,
Finesse cars. I mean, that car's a V8. That's a 2.5. Mm. You know what I mean? There's nothing here. I mean, nothing in the American department under 5 liters.
It's lovely, yeah. The two cars, when they first came out, one was that, and I thought, wow, one day. And the other one was the Vallelunga, when I first saw the Vallelunga. You know, they only made 54 of them, and I've managed to get a Vallelunga, so I've got one of them anyway.
What is that car? I don't
know. It's the first car Di Tommaso made.
Oh, really?
He took it to gear. He made 5 aluminium prototypes with an Italian stylist. Try to sell it to Ford because it uses a Ford engine. It's mid-rear engine. Backbone chassis before the Lotus Europa for rear engine car. Hmm. And which went completely wrong with the Mangusta, of course. He took it to Ford. They didn't want to make it. So he then went to Gear, and Gear said, we'll build it for you. And there was a young designer who had just started working for Gear, Giugiaro. And he took the original design, didn't change it much, he just finessed it, and it's just the most beautiful little car.
Oh, we gotta look that one up.
Yeah, now I gotta look that one up.
Yeah. I'm glad you knew the 2500, because nobody knows that car.
Yeah,
and it took us a minute to kind of like remember what it was, because we saw it was like on the Pebble Beach poster a few years ago, and then it was one on the lawn last year, and we just never, it was like, what is the cool car that we saw? It was years ago, and it's kind of, it's so beautiful.
If I see another one now, I'm gonna nail it.
Yeah,
they're expensive now. I mean, they didn't make any of those cars.
No, not
they?
Many at all. No. I think less than the Vallelunga, actually.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, Gordon, well, thank you so much. We're going to let you get back to it, but always a pleasure, and congratulations on the new cars that you got debuted. It sounds like you guys are going to have some fun this weekend. Are you going to be driving, or you just keep getting Dario to go out there?
Oh, now I've got Dario, I can relax. Yeah. And he's quicker than me.
And we were just talking to Marino yesterday as well. Yeah. Guys, yeah, he's great. Yeah, we all sat at Goodwood together.
Dario's part of the family. You know, he really. The great thing about Dario is, you know, we do these videos to keep the customers up to speed with where we are on all the car designs, is that he so believes in the product, you know, that he's. There's none of those videos are scripted. You know, we just go, well, what are we going to talk about? Are we going to talk about aerodynamics? And off we go. He just believes in the car.
I've seen some of the videos, and they actually are pretty special because. You guys are walking through and even talking about the car, and you just see Dario's face. He's just in awe the whole time, and he's like, ooh, what about this? What about this? And you know he knows the answers, right, because you've talked about it, but he just wants to hear it from you. He's waiting to tell it on camera, and he's so great that way. So I'm glad you guys are working together. It's a great partnership.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Lovely. I mean, they're all the Franchitti's are super. They're just, their mom raised them right or something. I don't know what it is. Yeah. They're good dudes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gordon.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening to CarCast. Just a reminder, you can follow us on social media. I'm at Moderator, and Drink Bravaco is the website for our beverage company. The hard seltzers are great. People seem to be liking them. We're at Drink Bravaco on social media. We're at drinkbravago.com. And, Goldberg 95 and Goldberg's Garage. Go to YouTube, subscribe. We appreciate that. We're looking for some fun stuff. And I don't know. Are we missing anything else? I think we got it all covered.
We need to do some off the cuff Bravago advertising.
We are. The more I drink it, the better the commercials come out to be. So, we're going to come up with some good stuff for that as well. So thanks, guys. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.